I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Doors Open Milwaukee is this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, September 17 and 18. It's in its sixth year, I believe. I remember when it was just a twinkle in the eye of George Wagner from Central Library, who went to Toronto and said, we should do in Milwaukee what they're doing in Toronto. And so we brought it to Historic Milwaukee and off it went, and here it's going to be again. It's become an incredibly popular event, which is so good. It's a chance for you to see buildings and gardens and places that you may have driven by and always wondered, what's the history of that interesting place that I don't know very much about? There are returning favorites this year, and there are many new sites. Did I tell you there were over 160 sites? There's a gas station in West Dallas that's open to the public for the first time in many years. There's another rock climbing adventure rock that was just completed the construction this summer. So it's a way for you to see sites that you may not have access to otherwise, because they're open to you, the public. Doors Open Milwaukee, and we are delighted to have a full hour on that this hour. Grace Fuhrer is Director of Special Events at Historic Milwaukee. She'll guide us through what all there is for Doors Open Milwaukee. And Adam Carr is also with us. Adam is a freelance writer and author of a really lovely book, Explore Milwaukee, Your Neighborhood, and we'll talk about what's included in his book, which is all kinds of things, and it's for all ages, but it's particularly an important book for young people, too. Sections on play, food, nature, commerce, serving, learning, repurposing, celebrating. He also has neighborhoods in here and schools and communities and sister cities, and so it's it's worth your attention. And thank you, Grace and Adam, for being with us. Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Before we talk about this year specifically, isn't this something that this event, and I do clearly remember speaking with George a long time ago, well, you know, we're going to try this. We're going to see how it goes. They had no idea if anybody was going to show up. And holy Toledo, holy Milwaukee, did people ever show up? And then they showed up year after year after year. It's great.
It's incredible. And those numbers just keep rising, too. I was involved in the project the first year as the program manager at Historic Milwaukee, so I had the pleasure of working with George at that time. And like you said, we just had no idea what numbers to expect. The first year, 10,000 people showed up to 80 sites, which really blew our expectations.
Right.
And each year after that, it's risen about 5,000 people each year. So last year, we had over 30,000 visitors, and we're interested to see what this year brings.
Yeah. So what does that mean, Adam? Why are there so many people who want to go in certain doors?
Well, the city is here every day, but the invitation to explore it isn't. So I think the amount of legwork that Historic Milwaukee, Inc., Grace does to get all these different buildings coordinated on the same weekend to open their doors, it's such a huge amount of legwork that if any individual were to try to do that themselves, that would be their full-time job, and it is for Grace. It's such an easy opportunity to get out and see your city. It's also, you know, there's places within your own community, within your adjacent communities, within communities you might not already know. And, you know, a lot of times it's no secret, Milwaukee's a very divided city, so sometimes the community next to yours can be a hard nut to crack, or a community that isn't your own. You might feel as if you're trespassing, just being in a different place. And Doors Open makes it very clear you're invited. Come to this building. This is a destination to go.
And this year, you're expanding. It used to mostly be in downtown Milwaukee, but this year, you're expanding, aren't you? You're going out to Sherman Park. You're going to West Dallas.
Yeah, and we've had sites in neighborhoods for the last several years, but have tried to be more intentional about clustering sites in neighborhoods this year so that it would be easy for you to travel to that neighborhood, park your car, park your bike, and walk in and out of several sites. So, like you said, Sherman Park, Clark Square, and West Dallas are three communities that we are spotlighting and encouraging folks to visit. Just when you mentioned the Seneca gas station in West Dallas, I thought of Sherman Park also actually has a gas station that we're featuring that is the Sherman Perk coffee shop.
Yes.
Yeah.
I
so
know well.
Definitely worth checking out the amazing reuse that has happened there. There's a couple of great Milwaukee public schools in the Sherman Park neighborhood. The Washington High School, which features the Alumni Hall of Fame with the late Gene Wilder and Bud Selig and Herb Cole. The Milwaukee French Immersion School will be part of it. There's some amazing tile work on the interior and great art that is worth exploring in that space. And then Clark Square, I'd love to just give a shout out to the Journey House. Both their community center and the Packer practice field are going to be part of the event this year. The Packer practice field is located in Mitchell Park and is now home to their Journey House football and cheerleading program, but the turf itself was donated by the Green Bay Packers.
Oh, really?
They practiced on it in the late 90s and early 2000, and it's kind of the only thing like its kind in North America where an NFL team has donated their turf to a community organization. Mm. Yeah.
Well, I didn't even know that.
There you go.
Something new about the city you've lived in for a long time. And you, your book is really a lovely book. You look
Thank
at
you.
Communities, too, and you couldn't pick every single community because it's a large city. But why don't you tell us about the communities that may be a little known that are absolutely intriguing?
For sure. The book I wrote with a nonprofit in town named Sharp Literacy that does literacy education around the city, and I spent a school year with five different classrooms around Milwaukee, so in the development of the book. And I'd visit them once a month. I worked with St. Anthony's, Forest Home, Kluge, Hmong American Peace Academy, and Beam Academy, so North Side School, South Side School, sort of a kaleidoscope of different cultures. And what I would do during those sessions is I'd share with them about the city. We went block, neighbor, or home, block, neighborhood, city, sort of telescoping outwards. I'd give them a presentation, share with them some information from around their neighborhood, from around their community, that they'd then go home and share what they discovered on their own in their own community.
Mm-hmm.
And that really informed the book that I wrote, Explore MKE, Your Neighborhood, Our City. And, you know, that was in the question you said, you know, I couldn't hit every neighborhood, but I really wanted to make the book accessible to any young Milwaukeean picking up the book. Because a lot of times, as an expert, at least the impression I get is an expert might say, Milwaukee's downtown, and you're over here. You're on the outside looking in. And I just firmly believe that that is the wrong approach to how our city works. Each of the students that I worked with, their account, their version, their story of Milwaukee is as important and valid as anybody else's. So in the book, the invitation really is for each person who picks it up to take that as a starting point, but then to use that as sort of the first chapter in their story of Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's true that we tend to be kind of in our own communities and we don't know very much about other parts of the city? Are we segregated? I know we're a segregated city, but are we segregated in that way as well, that we don't go venture much beyond where we work or where we live, do you think?
Yeah, and I think that we sometimes need to be asked or told to take the opportunity to do that. So we hope that this event offers people that chance. Although, why not go to Clark Square and grab a bite to eat any day of the year? So it's not as if you can't cross those boundaries. It's just that people tend to be stuck in their day-to-day. Even the act of, we're getting a lot of phone calls right now. We distributed these print event guides in the Sunday Journal Sentinel for Doors Open, and we're getting a lot of calls this week asking where folks can pick them up. Right now they're just at our office, so I'll plug that at 235 East Michigan Street. But the point being that a lot of, when we tell people that, they aren't necessarily inclined to come down to our office in advance of the event just because of the difficulty or challenge sometimes of leaving your own backyard.
So the paths and patterns of people in Milwaukee definitely are bottled up. It's a byproduct mm-hmm. of our segregation, and a lot of times our curiosity ends at the end of the world that, you know, we're connected to. And that makes sense. It's no matter what community you're in, all of us have sort of barriers, boundaries, sort of, you know, de facto ends to the community that we feel comfortable in. And I think that's in part, to go back to your very first question, that's why something like Doors Open is so important, because it offers that invitation. It is a green light to say your curiosity for the city, while it might feel, you know, difficult to indulge in on any old day, this is a weekend that's really devoted to that.
Yeah, it sure is. And things that, the thing I love about it is that we do pass these buildings, and we're in downtown Milwaukee, but there is just an incredible amount of history, and you can go to work in the building maybe or drive sure. by it every day, and you have no idea how it was built, when it was built, what the history is. It's wonderful to learn all of that.
It is. And this year we're partnering for the first time with the Wisconsin Historical Society to offer open archives during Doors
Excellent.
Open. So several sites, including Johnson Controls, which is involved for the first time this year, and the Milwaukee Police Academy, the Milwaukee Historical Society, Central Library, will be opening up some of their more rare archives to the public to see, so that it won't be just looking at the bricks and mortar of the space and right. learning about the building itself, but also learning even more about the history of Milwaukee through these archives.
You were saying, Grace, when you came in, that one of the more popular tours, and we must talk about it, is Jones Island.
Correct. Yes, it is. And it's really a civil engineering feat. And Jones Island is home now to the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District, where we have our sewage treatment facility. Jones Island, or Veolia, rather, is the owner of the space, and they offer really in-depth tours that day. So visitors are welcome to take a 30-minute tour or a one-hour more in-depth tour. And all of the visitors get a 5-pound bag of Milorganite.
Whoop! And Milorganite is on Adam's shirt. Tell us about Milorganite.
So I went on this tour last year of of the MMSD processing plant.
Yeah.
And they gave me a T-shirt. I don't know if everyone gets a T-shirt, but I got one, and I wear it all the time proudly. And I'm wearing it right now for those of you listening. And I did also get that 5-pound bag of Milorganite. And even just today for lunch, I made myself a sandwich, which included tomatoes grown out on my balcony and peppers grown on my balcony, which Milorganite, you know, we fertilized our plants with it about halfway through the growing season.
Yeah.
And they went from sort of shabby plants that I wasn't particularly proud of
right.
to, within a week, these big, bountiful plants.
Within a week?
Within a week.
Woo-wee.
They really did. I'm not exaggerating. I have the proof on my balcony. You can meet me at my apartment and come see them, or even taste it. But, yeah, it is. I do think, you know, I took my cousin. My cousin was in town from Chicago, and it was a great time to impress your cousin from Chicago with what's in Milwaukee. We went on the MMSD tour, and I'd actually never gone on the tour either, and neither of us had ever seen anything like it. It really is that, I mean, it's an incredible tour, just kind of seeing, I guess, you know, you're seeing the actual. There's a lot of questions about the city of Milwaukee, like, what happens when you flush the toilet? This is the answer. You can go check it out, and it's really fun.
Yeah, I never really asked myself that question.
Sometimes you don't want to.
There you go.
Forevermore, I will ask that question. So what's new this year? And let's get some, well, let's tell people they can call in, too. 800-486-8655. We're talking about Doors Open Milwaukee, which is this Saturday and Sunday in Milwaukee. If you have any questions, if you've been to Doors Milwaukee and you want to sing its praises, or if you have questions about a specific building, we'd like to hear from you. 800-486-8655. How many things new? Anything you want to highlight, Grace?
So over 40 of the buildings are new this year. A couple of the more prominent sites that I anticipate will be very popular include the Catholic Financial Life Building, which is near Marquette's campus. It is an 18-story skyscraper, and it has a rooftop pool.
Oh, it does?
It does. So this is really the point of attraction of that site. They'll also be showing off some of their units and the chapel on the ground floor. But the views from that building, specifically, it's this 360 view of all of downtown from the east side to the west side.
Very
so it's
nice.
Really a unique opportunity to see the city from that view. The 833 Michigan Building, which is one of Milwaukee's newest skyscrapers on the east side of Michigan Street, is going to be open for the first time this year. They just recently opened their doors, and visitors will be able to see their fourth floor common areas, lobbies, their workout room, and be able to see some really great views of Lake Michigan from there as well. So those are a couple of
very
the
nice.
More prominent ones.
I always like to see Frank Lloyd Wright buildings, Annunciation Greek Orthodox Church.
That's
is
right.
nice too, right?
That's true. And that's going to be open Saturday only. They will be offering tours every hour on the hour. Something that folks are asking about a lot is whether you need a ticket to see any of these sites.
Right.
You do not need a ticket to see the 165 sites that are open for free. So Annunciation, for example, you can access completely for free. You just show up and take the tour.
Mm-hmm.
There's another Frank Lloyd Wright building that's open, or series of buildings, the American System Homes, which are on Layton and Burnham.
Right.
And I actually live about 4 blocks from there.
Oh.
So last year when my cousin was in town, we went to those. We also went to The Factory, which is an art studio in Clark Square, which is open again this year. And, you know, sometimes it can be hard to, when you look at the Doors Open catalog, it's just so extensive to know where to start. So sometimes just saying, I'm going to go to the one that's 4 blocks from my house or whatever one's closest can be a good way to determine your entry point. And when you go to the American System Built Homes, I think they're really incredible. It's a historically significant Frank Lloyd Wright site. And it's this sort of utopian vision that Frank Lloyd Wright had. He has these homes that he envisioned entire neighborhoods composed of. He kind of thought these would become prefab and that this would become, you know, there would be whole suburbs, American suburbs made up of these. So when you go to the American System Built Homes, and I think this sort of captures what I'm so excited about, Doors Open, is that there is a neighborhood around these buildings. There is an actual community here. And it might not conform necessarily to the Frank Lloyd Wright utopian vision of what a neighborhood would be. But for me, as a person who lives there and as a person who loves Milwaukee, I think I would put what's in that community today up against his vision any day
really?
Of the week.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
And I think that's something with Doors Open. You have this invitation to go and see buildings, go to destinations. But I think just as important is to sort of pay attention to the fabric of what's between.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because there's... You're going to go to schoolhouses, you can go to firehouses, but, you know, they're homes, they're people, they're communities
right. In
between those.
Right.
So, and I think that that's kind of one of the really great advantages of this weekend is you can kind of absorb parts of the city that you might not otherwise feel, you know, invited to.
Yeah.
And just quickly, the American System Built Homes are coming up on their 100th anniversary
this year.
Oh,
my goodness, are they?
They are. So they're going to have a big celebration during Doors Open to honor that. And
nice.
As part of the celebration, they will be hosting one of the Access Contemporary Music pieces that will be underway during the event. So we're collaborating with Access Contemporary Music, an organization that composes music and then plays it specifically for Doors Open
Very
sites.
Nice.
So they're one of those sites that
Very
would
nice.
Be worth listening to.
Any questions about Doors Open? Give us a ring. We'll give you information on where to get the whole brochure of the events on Saturday and Sunday, where to get more information. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to John in Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to call and mention something that's on the tour tomorrow. It's the Joan of Arc Chapel that's on the Marquette University campus. And it is, of all the buildings that will be available over the weekend, it's by far the oldest. It was originally built in 1420.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And moved
so,
here, right?
It's a very cool place. And it's open, of course, in the mall on the Marquette campus. It's kind of not easy to find because it's kind of surrounded by old buildings, but it's just south of Wisconsin Avenue and east of 16th Street.
Yeah, and it was moved here?
It was moved here from France, yes, in 1927. Actually, it's kind of a long story. I don't know if you have that much time.
Well, we have a little bit of time if you want to tell us part of it.
Sure. Well, it was originally purchased by a woman who was actually... a daughter of James Hill, who was a railway baron from the 1880s in Minneapolis. He built a railway and made billions of dollars with it, and she inherited a lot of that money. So she was able to indulge her professional interest in medieval art. And so when she found the building was available, she asked to have it tacked up and sent over. And that's what they did. It was actually the last such building to leave France. After the following year, they legislated against any more of that kind of thing leaving the country.
Thank you very much. That must be one of the oldest places, I would think, on the whole Doors Open tour, is it not?
Hands down, the oldest.
It is the oldest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Predates our country.
It sure does. That is really old. What about some other real gems that people see all the time that drive by that have this fascinating history that we just don't know about?
The best place at the historic Pabst Brewery is a great one that was built in 1858, so it's not as old as Joan of Arc Chapel, but it's definitely one of the older ones on the tour. And that was built for Jefferson Elementary School, a Milwaukee public school, and operated as that until 1890, when the Pabst Brewing Company purchased it and turned it into their corporate headquarters. And operated as that until the 90s. They basically closed their door from one day to the next, and it sat vacant until 2001 when it was purchased and has been restored beautifully. And so it's a great space to look at. It now serves primarily as an event venue, but they do really nice historic tours there as well.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited about French Immersion School on 53rd and North Avenue. It's the old Von Steuben. It used to be a school named Von Steuben. And when I was in 7th, 9th, and 11th grade, I played the French horn in the All-City Music Biennial, practiced in the gym of Von Steuben. So when I was a kid, I didn't know what that was. We got there, and I remember the gym being this really big cavernous space, and there's all these kids that came from around the city to play music together. And so even though it's one of our sort of typical Milwaukee public schools that is very beautiful, I'm excited about going back into that gym again and sort of holding up my experience that I have from being a 7th grader, 9th grader, 11th grader, being in that gym to now, the present day. It's found a new life. I actually went to French Immersion Elementary as well back when it was on the south side on 88th Street. So it's kind of this. So I think for a lot of people, I'm sure if you take a spin through the full lineup, there's so much different sort of experience in the city. You'll find something to indulge in your own nostalgia. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all these little sites that might not be exciting necessarily to anyone else, but the people who are connected to it.
Yeah. You know? French Immersion is a very good school, too. What about little park spaces? I know that they were in your book. Are there spaces, the little place where you can golf that's, that little golf driving range? Are there the little park spaces that may have buildings close to them or near them, parks that we ought to pay special attention to over the weekend?
Well, I will plug one park. I'm giving a walking tour of it. It's named Three Bridges Park, and it is one of Milwaukee's newest parks. It's an old rail switching yard, so it's really between the domes and the 35th Street Viaduct, so it's kind of nestled in there. On the west end is the Menominee Valley Urban Ecology Center. Mm-hmm. And I'm giving a walking tour of it, and I think that's sold out, so you can't join that. But Three Bridges Park is there all the time. So if you go check out the Packers Field, it's just right through sort of the back of the park. And it offers these incredible vistas of sort of our whole city. You can see the south side, you can see the north side, you can see all the way to downtown, you can see the Menominee Valley, and it's nice. the industrial corridor. So it offers this sort of expansive and sort of just this view of the history and the present and the future of Milwaukee. And I run through Three Bridges Park all the time when I go out and jogs, and I just personally love it a lot, and that would be a place to check out. It's I don't know if it's actually on the list, but it's one of those places that is, as you're sort of stumbling around Milwaukee looking for new things, Three Bridges Park between the 27th and 35th Street Viaducts is a phenomenal place.
And it's right next to the Urban Ecology Center Menominee Valley Branch, which is a part of Doors Open, so that's a great thing to zip over and see when you're in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And the Urban Ecology Center is also part of our Family Passport program, so for people with kids who are looking for things to do, we call out 24 sites that are family-friendly and that have kid activities happening, so that would be a really great place to bring the family.
Nice. Now, we need to figure out how to get information about all the sites that are open. Where can you get these wonderful brochures that list all of them? You talked about at Historic Milwaukee. Are there other places around town we can get these?
So the PDF of the event guide can be found on our website, which is doorsopenmilwaukee.org.
And we doorsopenmilwaukee.org. Okay.
And the event guide is there. We also have it in a version of sort of a searching, filtering system for if you don't know what you want to see, you can click on a button that says manufacturing, and all of the manufacturing sites will pop up. So it hopefully helps you interact with the event a little bit. Otherwise, the physical event guides can be found at our office, 235 East Michigan Street.
Okay. And some of the tours, we should tell you, you should bring some money for some of the tours. You need to sign up for some of them in advance.
So the 165 buildings that we have on the event are available for free, no tickets required. But then we do have dozens of expert-led tours, and Adam is a tour guide for two of those. Tickets for those are available online, so you do need tickets in advance online, and you can find all of those at doorsopenmilwaukee.org as well.
Okay. Have we forgotten anything?
I brought... this is a suggestion for your listeners or for anyone who's doing Doors Open. There's a lot of great restaurants or places to eat. That's a great way to experience a neighborhood or a community is through its food.
Absolutely.
And on my bike ride down here, I'm going to start rustling my bag here. on my bike ride here from the south side, I was going down Cesar Chavez Drive. There's a new statue of Cesar Chavez on Cesar Chavez Drive, which would be something to check out. But I stopped at Berta's Tamales, which is a food truck, and I bought 6 tamales.
Ooh.
And I got medium and spicy. And this is for you.
This is
a gift
to you.
And I'm going to open it. And it smells good. It
smells great.
Don't eat the corn husks.
Okay.
I know you probably know that. But so I think where you see a food truck, particularly if you're on the south side, there's a lot of those, or a restaurant. That's another way to sort of, bolster your experience, get sort of an authentic, both, the experience, but also taste and smell the communities that you're traveling in.
Yeah, thank you,
Adam. I'm going to rustle it a little bit more.
Have a little party when we get off the air.
And I assure you, they smell good, and they will taste good.
I'm sure they will.
I knew this was a radio interview, but I brought visual aids anyway.
That's all right. People can see it in their mind's eye, which is fine. And your book, where can you get your book?
You could go to Sharp Literacy's website to buy it.
Okay.
And actually, you could go to HMI. If you go to HMI Historic Milwaukee and get an event guide there, they also are selling the book, and they have a little boutique where they sell Milwaukee stuff.
Oh, nice.
They have signed copies, which you can't get. I don't think there's anywhere else that has signed copies right now. So.
All right. You heard it here.
Yeah, you did. Thank you both so much. All the best this weekend. I hope you have a terrific turnout. And I think you're going to have perfect weather, so that should be good.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Our pleasure. Sixth year in a row we've done this. Grace Fuhrer is Director of Special Events at Historic Milwaukee. And Adam Carr, freelance writer, author of the book Explore Milwaukee, Your Neighborhood, and bearer of great lunchtime gifts to our program. And we thank him so much for that. We also want to let you know that there's going to be a story slam as part of Doors Open Milwaukee. It's going to be at the Milwaukee Black Historical Society and Museum on Saturday, and the doors open at 6, and the slam will be at 7 o'clock. Exfabula and Historic Milwaukee are partnering to present a Milwaukee neighborhood-inspired story slam as part of Doors Open Milwaukee. And we're going to hear all about Exfabula, which is really a neat thing in this city, which was started some time ago. We have two guests with us in our studio, Megan McGee. Megan is Executive Director of Exfabula. Hello, Megan.
Hello.
Hi. Thank you very much for being with us. And also joining us is Katarina Wren. She's Executive Director of Milwaukee Turners, and she is going to be one of the people sharing a story, and she's going to share one with us, too. She has a very interesting background. She's been working in the nonprofit administration field for 20 years, executive director of Milwaukee Turners right now, and she's been sharing yoga practices with young people, especially those who live in violent and impoverished neighborhoods, as well as inmates in the prison system. She is a native of Berlin, Germany, and her story is related to that. She's lived in Milwaukee since the age of 6. Katarina, thank you so much for being with us.
Hello.
Hi. Very nice to have you here.
Thanks.
So, Megan, let's talk. You were sitting around having lunch or dinner one night, you and friends, and you decided, wouldn't it be nice to have a story slam going in the city? Is that how it happened?
Basically.
It did.
Yeah. 2009, lots of random conversations with, two people here, three people there. Until finally, I think we had said enough times, someone should start a story slam. Someone pointed out, maybe you guys should start it because you can't stop talking about it. So we went to Maharaja, had some lunch buffet, and by the end of lunch, we decided that we were going to put on an event 6 weeks later. Boom.
Woo, and it's been going for how long now?
This is our 8th season.
Oh my gosh, it's been around for a long time.
Yeah, so it was totally grassroots for the first couple years, completely volunteer run. I came on as executive director a couple years ago, so it's allowed us to do more outreach, and I think that's why more people know us now. For a while, I mean, we had a loyal following, but it was a little bit under the radar.
Right. So you get together once a month for these story slams from October till when?
Actually, we even have one in September, and then we run through May. Yeah. So those are the monthly events, but we do a lot of community collaborations as well. So a lot of times we'll work with a nonprofit or a school or a business to put together either a workshop or a story slam or some other storytelling programming. Basically, everyone has stories to share. We're going to work with everybody until everyone in the area gets to tell their story and gets to listen to each other.
Mm. So why do you think that's important?
I think that it's really easy to move through life without taking time to pause and reflect. And also, we live in a culture where it doesn't always feel okay to be vulnerable, to show your true self. But whenever you share a story, you kind of give permission to other people as well to be vulnerable. It's a way to heal. I think it's also an interesting way to learn. There are things that if you just told me, like something is true, I might not believe you. But if I hear a story, I can kind of process information differently. So we're working with all the different aspects of applied storytelling. Can we heal? Can we teach? Can we help people connect with each other in different creative ways? Mm-hmm. All while feeling like entertainment. Mm.
So you can talk about anything. It's for 5 minutes.
Yep. People come, they throw their name in the hat, they can get up on stage. We never know what they're going to say. So
you never know what they're going to say.
Well, at the monthly slams, no. We do have some curated events, like this doors open slam is curated. The storytellers were selected. But for the monthly events, we hold those events in bars and in theaters, and they are for adults because adults can have complicated lives. And over the course of an evening, we could hear a totally fun story about someone's vacation or a relationship or whatnot. And then in the same evening, we might hear a story about some trauma. In fact, we often do. So, you know, it runs the gamut.
Right. And you just pull names out of a hat. So you come prepared, but you're not sure if you're going to be on stage telling a story.
Right. We do a couple things to try to encourage new voices. We do, over the course of an evening, it's usually 9 stories on stage. So the middle 3, slots 4, 5, and 6, we do drawings with just first-timers. So get some newbies up there. And, you know, at events, there are plenty of events where there's only 9 names in the hat. There are some events where there's 11 or 12. But honestly, you know, if people come to more than one slam, like you're gonna get up there. It's going to happen. Statistically, we don't have so many people that are just eager to jump up there. And the good thing is we have other formats, too. In addition to getting on stage, people can write a story on a slip of paper. We call those ultra shorts. So 1 to 5 lines on whatever the theme of the night is, and then MCs read them on stage. And that's fun because some stories don't really need 5 minutes.
Right.
And some stories might not be things you want to put your name on just yet, for whatever reason. So you want to be anonymous? Great. Go for it.
Yeah. So is it really a counter, and does it indicate, we keep hearing that we all have these ADD attention spans, that we're on Twitter all the time, that we've lost the ability to write letters or to write stories or to communicate with each other. We just do it electronically. Does it fly in the face of that kind of common wisdom? Is it a need that we have because we're so electronically obsessed?
Well, our brains are wired for narrative, and I do think people crave this sort of kind of deep, meaningful entertainment. You certainly see that people come to these events wanting to do something a little deeper, something where you actually are in the moment for a while. So that's pretty powerful. The other thing is really just to go back to the whole idea of vulnerability. We've curated just a different sort of atmosphere. So there are the interactions you have out in the world where you're trying to tell everybody, I'm the expert and I know everything and you should trust me and hire me and like my posts. Right. Well, at this event, I think some of the stories that work really best are the ones where people get up there and say, hi, I'm a flawed human being. And everyone else in the audience is like, yes, me too, me too. And that's okay. We can learn. We are complex creatures. And we can even admit to things maybe we have some shame about and take ownership of them that way. In a world where maybe some people would just like to hide things under the rug, we're saying, nah, let's go for some nuance. It's not 140 characters. It's a lot more than that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great you're doing it. All right, Katarina, what attracted you to becoming a storyteller? Obviously, you're doing so many interesting things in your life. You probably have all kinds of stories. But the one that you've been sharing is pretty personal to you.
Yes. Well, this felt like an opportunity to talk about how working at the Turners has inspired me in many ways. Unexpectedly, I've been with the Turners for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, if you would have told me 20, 30 years ago that I would be welcoming people to the most German building in the city, I would have said you're crazy. Because I really had no intention of having any sort of German-related profession. I came to this country at the age of 6 and got made fun of for being German. And I learned very quickly that being German was not viewed as being a positive thing. And so it was something that I kind of hid for a long time. And so working for the Turners has allowed me to connect with my Germanness in a different way. And it's inspired me to go back to school. I just recently graduated with a master's degree in community psychology.
Mm.
And I feel that the Turner mission of social justice and community involvement and tolerance is very relevant to today. But people don't necessarily know about the history. And I didn't know about the history until I started working there. I feel like it's brought out elements of my story that I've been able to experience in a different way, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's a story I've been struggling with most of my life, because when somebody just asked me today if I'm from Milwaukee, and I said, well, I've been living here since I was 6, and he said, oh, then that counts. And it was funny to hear that, because for so long people doubted me if I said that I was from Milwaukee. They say, you don't sound like you're from Milwaukee, and you don't look like you're from Milwaukee.
Oh.
I still don't know what that means.
I don't either.
Yeah.
Because, we're a mixture of so many. So can you tell your story now? Was that
sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Sure. So when I came, like I said, I was 6 years old. And in first grade, the kids made fun of me because of my accent, and they made fun of my clothes, and they actually called me a Nazi. And I did not know what a Nazi was. And I often wonder what my mom must have thought when I came home and said that, because she grew up during World War II, and it was a very traumatic time for her and her family. My grandfather was a pacifist, so he didn't want to be involved in that war. So people don't necessarily know that side of it. And so she hadn't exactly prepped me for being called a Nazi. And my American grandparents made it known that they weren't happy that German was my first language. They even referred to my parents' marriage as a war marriage. And there wasn't a war in Germany in 1968. So I could tell that now I understand that they were colored by how they viewed World War II and how it was viewed here in Milwaukee. But at the age of 6, I didn't understand that. And so when I was 10, I read everything that I could about the Holocaust, because I really needed to understand this legacy of shame and why being German was viewed as a bad thing. Because we would go back to visit my relatives, and I felt at home when I was in Germany, but then when I was here, I had to hide that Germanness, and I went by the more American nickname Kathy. I like the name, but it never felt right for me. And I feel like that time that I spent learning about the Holocaust was important because, yes, I was young at the age of 10, but it taught me a sense of social responsibility at a very young age. So that legacy of shame of being German is something that I think a lot of younger Germans have turned into a positive thing and being very socially conscious. But it wasn't, as I said, I didn't plan to have any sort of German-related profession. So I didn't even take German in high school. So when I went to UWM, someone said, well, you can get retroactive credits. You could skip a whole semester, and that sounded great to me. So the testers didn't realize that although when I speak German, I sound like a native, my grammar was atrocious. And, the funny thing about German grammar, anybody who's studied German can tell you that German grammar is complicated, but I would say being German is also very complicated. But I found out that there was a year of study abroad in Berlin, and that's the city where I was born, and it was a free year, and I thought, okay, well, I'll apply to grad school, and so then there I was in Germany, in Berlin, in this incredible city where tolerance is more prominent and where being uniquely yourself is celebrated more than in many cities around the world. And I'll be honest, I didn't want to leave. I felt at home for probably the first time in my life. And surprisingly enough, I felt Milwaukee calling me back, and I missed Milwaukee. I honestly didn't expect that. And so when I started working for the Turners about 9 years ago, that's kind of a story in and of itself, I realized as I learned about the Turners that it wasn't about nostalgia, and it wasn't about beer, and it wasn't about lederhosen, that their history is really more about that sense of social responsibility. And the motto is sound mind, sound body. And if you don't know Turner Hall, one of the things that I love about it is you have to experience the whole building. And most people know one part of it. They know maybe the restaurant, maybe they've been there for a fish fry, or maybe they know the ballroom, or maybe they know the climbing gym. Most people don't know that we have a rock climbing gym in the basement of Turner Hall. But the fact that you have to get to know the whole building to get its sense, its character, I feel people are like that. You need to get to know the whole building of a person, as it were. So the Turners are pretty different from the German groups that I had experienced growing up. And I feel that I've been inspired in so many ways in my own life. Like I said, I went back to school to study community psychology, but I also became a yoga teacher. And I've become a trauma-informed yoga teacher, and Megan was mentioning that storytelling is important for processing trauma, and I really believe that. The definition of trauma is separation of mind and body, and the Turners' motto is sound mind, sound body. And I feel like the Turners were really onto something, because if we have the access to services that allow us to build a strong body, and I feel that in the arena of public health, we have a long way to come in that. I would love to make yoga accessible to all, but we're not quite there yet. But also the cultivating of a sound mind and what that means to different people in a way that brings sound mind and sound body together so that we can heal more as a culture. I feel like the Turners have some inspiration for us in that, because they've certainly inspired me in that regard. Mm,
I'm so glad you found them and they found you. And thank you. Thank you. That's quite a story. Yeah, I can see why these are captivating events, huh?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When in life do we really stop to listen to each other? And that's another important lesson of this work. I think that after you come to the events, maybe the stories that you have buried deep within your mind start to come to the surface. And even during the breaks, we hear people talking with each other. And hopefully there are things that go a little bit deeper than maybe the everyday conversations we have. So honestly, on some level, these are just events. But on another, we're inviting people to be fully present and to really connect with each other. And maybe even really connect with people that they just might not even come to contact with otherwise.
Let's welcome phone calls. We have some coming in. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Story Slam will be a part of Doors Open Milwaukee this go-around at the Wisconsin Black Historical Society and Museum. Ex-Fabula and Historic Milwaukee are partnering to present Milwaukee Neighborhood-Inspired Story Slam as part of Doors Open Milwaukee. And we're hearing what it's all about. We had the great pleasure of hearing Katarina Wren with her story. She's now Executive Director of Milwaukee Turners. Also with us in Milwaukee studio, the Executive Director of Ex-Fabula, Megan McGee. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We have time for a few phone calls. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's go to Mary in Sheboygan. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Kathleen, and hi, Megan. This is Mary.
Megan
and I first met a few years ago when Ex-Fabula came to Sheboygan to start the storytelling group there.
Oh, so and it's in Sheboygan, too. Great.
Yep. Great Lakes Storytellers. We're still going kind of limping along, but we're still telling stories. But I just wanted to re-echo what your other guest had said about, we had the opportunity to go, my husband and I, and tell a story together at Turner Hall with Ex-Fabula.
Oh.
And while we were waiting for our turn, and then after it was over, we kind of explored backstage and downstairs and as many rooms as we could get into. And it was really interesting. So it just kind of, it was kind of a fun day and a fun evening. And I would encourage anybody that has a chance, first of all, to tell a story, and secondly, to go and investigate all those places in Milwaukee that are open.
It makes for a perfect weekend, doesn't it?
Yes, indeed.
It really would.
Yeah.
It really would.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. So you've inspired groups in other parts of the state?
Well, we did. We were artists in residence at the John Michael Kohler Arts Center in Sheboygan. Oh. That was one of the first projects we did before we even had full-time staff. We were up there for 6 months, and we did a variety of programs, including that was where we did our first ever Spanish language programming.
Oh, nice.
And bilingual programming. We did some work with the Hmong community. Really just a lot of different types of outreach, workshops and the like. And yeah, I remember Mary and Frank were some of our core people. You basically, no matter what Exfabula is doing, it's usually about finding people that have passion for it and inviting them to be part of the process, shaping everything that we do. So yeah, when they said, hey, we might start our own little spinoff, we said, go for it. Because really, if everyone has a story, we need everyone to help everyone else to get those stories out there. So that's a lot of what Exfabula is doing, helping get it going.
And have you done other stories, Katerina? Are you going to branch out and do more? You have a lot of stories, I'm sure.
I was in the fellow program that Exfabula did this past year, and that was an incredible opportunity because we crafted our stories together as a group, talking about experiences with racism and white privilege, and it was a very powerful experience. I haven't told that story publicly yet, but I hope to at some point.
Yeah, well, maybe you can tell it on the radio, because we're going to talk, I don't mean now, but we're planning on doing another show on that very issue. We do many of them. I think it's important, but might be a good time to tell the story. So give us some details about this weekend. It's Saturday?
Yeah, Saturday. So the doors open at 6. The show starts at 7, but everyone should come early because we're going to have some food vendors on site. Everyone can walk around the Historical Society and Museum. And actually, with the ticket, there's a free drink included. So really, there's the storytelling program, but there's also that opportunity to mingle and connect with each other. So people can come. During the program, we'll have 8 stories. There'll be an intermission in between, but we'll also, between all those stories, be reading ultra shorts. So again, anyone can submit their stories about Milwaukee buildings, neighborhoods, and so forth. So hopefully, over the course of the evening, we will hear so much about all the different corners of the city. And I know that whenever I hear those stories, I kind of start to see my landscape differently.
Right.
You go to a certain intersection and you remember, oh, I heard that so-and-so used to come here as a child or whatever. So hopefully we'll hear lots of those stories as well.
Yeah.
And it's a non-competitive event. It's you know, community building and so forth. And yeah, it's kind of a new experiment for us, but it's definitely in the vein of things Exfabula likes to do. I mean, we are dedicated to Milwaukee, so why not explore all the city through the stories?
Yeah. And do you know next month yet? Do you have a schedule
somewhere? Yeah, we have a full schedule. Actually, next month we are going to have an event at the Milwaukee Public Museum. I believe it's on October 18th. They have a special exhibit about, you know, hidden items and artifacts. So our theme is going to be hidden. And actually, I should also mention, they have one of the few stages that is handicap accessible. We have a whole project that's about welcoming more stories from individuals with disabilities to our stage. So I was walking around doing venue visits with Brian Peters at Independence First, and I'm now much more aware of that. So you can kind of see throughout everything we do, we're saying, what are the barriers to participating, and what are the stories we're not hearing? How do we get those out into the open so that everyone can have these really rich experiences?
Mm-hmm. And I'll bet there are some stories both of you have heard that will just stay with you forever, that you'll repeat, so the stories live on, don't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's some I just want to laugh just thinking about, and there are others where I just remember afterwards seeing strangers walk over to each other and hug each other and start connecting about whatever it was in that story.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so, I mean, people can go to exfabula.org if they want more information. We have other community collaborations as well, so all of those details are on our website.
Well, good for you for getting this going. This is great.
Oh, I've had a lot of help. I think it all happened pretty organically because the community just tells us what to do.
But then you do it. We're just saying something.
Me and
you
my great team of volunteers.
Yeah. Thank you both. Have a great weekend.
Thank you.
With
likewise.
Thank you.
You too.
Our thanks to Megan McGee, Executive Director of Exfabula, and Katerina Wren, who is Executive Director of Milwaukee Turners. You can go to their website, Exfabula, and get much more information about all that's going on this weekend and, of course, beyond, because this organization's been around for quite some time and they're doing great work. Thanks very much to Scotty Myers for producing this very interesting hour, and to Scotty as well for answering phone calls here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. Just a reminder, Tracy Stewart will be with us tomorrow afternoon during this hour. And I just want to end the show with this note. This afternoon, shortly after we go off the air here, I'm going to be really with heavy heart. This is a hard loss, be attending a memorial celebration of life. It's a service for Eric Vaughn. Eric Vaughn was on this show many times. He is a longtime journalist, mostly a terrific radio journalist here in Milwaukee. We did a documentary series, a couple of them actually, one through One City's Eyes, which was on the racial divide in Milwaukee. We did that in 1999. It could easily have run these many years later. And been timely. We were panelists on Milwaukee Public Television, chewing the fat over the news of the week. He was a superb radio host in this city, insightful, calm, nurtured many a journalist, and gave important insights on all kinds of issues. So here's to his life, which was really much too short, but very long in generosity and intelligence and also in kindness. Many in this city have lost a very good friend and a very important voice. So we say goodbye to him and thank you. We'll be with you again on Tuesday. Thanks for listening.